Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. North Carolina voters will soon be casting votes in the fall election, and it's now clear that they will be rendering judgments on six very complex and confusing constitutional amendments. One of those amendments proposes to enshrine something commonly referred to as Marcy's Law in the state constitution that would establish a number of constitutional rights for victims of crime. And while such an idea sounds simple and obvious at first blush, a closer look reveals serious potential problems with the amendment. Recently, ACLU of North Carolina senior policy counsel Susanna Birdsong joined me in studio to discuss the proposal. Well, Susanna Birdsong of the ACLU, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're here to talk today about an issue that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. Right now, there's this slate of constitutional amendments, a lot of controversy surrounding them, but one that hasn't gotten as much attention is this so-called Victims' Rights Amendment. It goes by the moniker Marcy's Law, which sounds like something, my goodness, how could we be against that or have any concerns about it? But you've taken a pretty deep dive into it and have some concerns about how this could actually impact North Carolina's criminal justice system were voters actually to approve this amendment come November.
As you said, this is an amendment that on its face sounds great, right? Of course we want to treat crime victims with the respect and dignity that they deserve as they are working their way through the criminal justice process. We want to support them, and I think that should be a priority of this state. But the devil's in the details with this amendment, and the way that it is structured and the way that it would enshrine victims' rights in the Constitution does have some problematic features. Just a couple of them that I'll point out is right now we already have a constitutional amendment that protects the rights of victims. And this would just expand on that and also take away the flexibility of the legislature to really decide ultimately how those rights play out in practice and how they are vindicated. And
I mean, this is an amendment, but it's got some pretty specific stuff in it. We think of constitutional amendments as kind of like broad outlines,
right,
and general rights, and then the legislature fills in the details later. But this actually has got a lot of specific stuff in it that it's pretty questionable as to how it would ultimately be implemented.
Yeah, a few of those things are things like this provides constitutional protections for victims in many more cases. So it includes all felonies, some misdemeanors, and also for the first time expands those rights to victims of quote unquote delinquent acts. And so what they're doing with that language is including juvenile justice proceedings. And so this would, you know, when we think about the juvenile justice system, it's really about rehabilitation for young people and young people who are accused of doing something wrong, but really we want to put them on the right path.
Right.
And this potentially turns that into a much more adversarial process because you're giving the victim of the crime access to every point in the proceeding. So they have the right to be heard at every point in the proceedings as they go through the process. There's a right to restitution, a right to be given information about the crime, right to be reasonably protected from the defendant, right to proceedings free from unreasonable delay. And I think these things all sound great, but when you think about right to a proceeding free from unreasonable delay, how does that potentially conflict with the defendant's right to effective assistance of counsel, to having enough time to prepare fully for a trial? There's no information for us here about when these things come to a head, how the court is going to grapple with the rights of the defendant that is enshrined in the Constitution and the right of the victim that will now also be enshrined in the Constitution without any other clarifying legislation to go with it.
One thing we should say here is that this is an amendment to the Constitution. Typically, amendments to the Constitution include what's known as implementing language, but in this case, we really don't have that. And that sort of is like most of the other amendments that are proposed to be on the ballot this November, in that we really, rather than them proceeding through the General Assembly with months of in-depth hearings and scholars and academics and experts coming forth to really fine-tune them, this thing really sort of just zipped through the General Assembly in a matter of days or weeks at the very end of the 2018 session, at the same time that they were passing a whole other raft of constitutional amendments. So there's a whole lot of questions that really didn't get answered during the process of passing this and putting it on the ballot. Am I right about that?
This one has been out there for longer than the others, and, mm-hmm. and there was some debate in the 2017 long session around this, but it then sat there and it didn't move until the end of the short session in 2018. And One of the things that wasn't fully vetted as we were talking about this in the legislature as it was being debated was the potential cost of this. And there was a fiscal note that had been prepared that was then buried, never to see the light of day. And I think that Melissa Botten has done some great reporting on that. And the fiscal note shows us that this has a price tag of potentially $16 million to implement it and then $30 million on an annual basis. When you think about all of the work of the local prosecutor's office that's going to be required if these rights are enshrined in the Constitution without any sort of other legislation that tells prosecutors how they are supposed to be interacting with victims going forward, these are just absolute rights. And right. So that requires a significant amount of money. And I think
you have to hire more people to help these folks as they guarantee their rights in the process.
A lot more people need to be hired. And, you know, this comes at a time when our state is facing other crises, and we have priorities for our state and a shrinking pot of money to fund those. And so, you know, we're dealing with an opioid crisis. We have infrastructure issues. Our schools need more funding. And all of these things are going to be competing for these funds. And I think that is an issue for me that should have been fully vetted in the legislature as this was making its way through. Is this an investment that we are really prepared to make as a state? Or are these rights only in name going to be enshrined in the Constitution and going to be hollow in effect?
You know, another interesting fact about this amendment, of course, is that it doesn't come from North Carolina. There's a very wealthy person who tragically had a family member who was a victim of crime and has sort of taken it upon themselves to fund a national campaign to just implement this in every state. Am I right about that?
Yeah, Henry Nicholas, who's a billionaire from California, who did have a tragedy in his family, has really taken this on as sort of a personal crusade. And so they passed the first one of these constitutional amendments in the state of California 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they've been sort of slowly marching across the country. And there are several states that are considering the same amendment now. Their ultimate goal is to enshrine these rights in the federal constitution. But I think when you have this sort of approach of outsourcing in this way, this isn't a one-size-fits-all solution, right. And we should be more thoughtful in North Carolina about what makes sense for our state, for our state criminal justice system, and how we need to support crime victims, how we can do that in the best way. And, you know, this sort of outsourced California model is not, in my opinion, the best way to do this.
And, of course, as you said, it wasn't as if we didn't already have some victims' rights already enshrined in our Constitution in North Carolina. So in a sense, it's like we're engrafting this on top of a system that's already there. There really wasn't, I don't believe, a whole lot of compelling testimony that we have a big problem in North Carolina in this regard. It's almost as if literally a very wealthy person has funded a PR campaign, hired lobbyists, come to North Carolina. It's a very superficially appealing idea.
Yes.
It's like it's being sold like a box of soap in a commercial rather than as an actual theoretically, you know, philosophically based concept for our state.
Yeah. And because we have this, we already have victims' rights enshrined in our Constitution, I would say at best this amendment is unnecessary, and at worst it is actively harmful when we think about implications for the state budget and implications for the rights of defendants going forward.
So there is a movement that has sprung up in North Carolina. They're calling it NixAll6. There's a hashtag on Twitter, NixAll6, in which I think there's a general belief that all of the six amendments that are being proposed in North Carolina for the ballot this fall are just being rushed through in such a way that we don't know exactly what they'll do. This is true, perhaps, of the voter ID amendment. It's true of the amendments to take away powers from the governor. Although this seems superficially going to be very difficult to beat this fall because of just the title of it, Who's Against Victims' Rights, it does seem at least conceivable that this movement to just say, the heck with this, we're not going to vote affirmatively on any amendments until we know the real truth about them, might catch on. I have some sense it's catching on. Any feelings about that?
I mean, yes. So we at the ACLU are opposed to all six amendments, you know, out of this belief that none of them are necessary and some are actively harmful. And I think that we should be pushing back against amendments that were proposed and some of them rushed through at the very end of session without full debate. And we're asking voters in the state to drastically change our state constitution in one fell swoop. And we need to be more thoughtful and deliberate about that process.
Yeah, as former Governor Easley said the other day, if you don't know, vote no. So it may well be that catches on. keep up the good work on this important topic and all the other ones you work with at the ACLU. To find out more about this online, about ACLU, people will go to aclu of North Carolina.org.
That's right.
aclu of North Carolina.org. Susanna Birdsong, thank you so much for being with us. We'll do this again soon.
All right.
Coming up next, one of North Carolina's leading champions for public education. Stay with us.